You know, What Happened Last Night is not a song, but the name of our next guest's syndicated column. Now, for years, New Yorkers and people all over the country have been turning to his column to see what's happening in the world of show business. Here is Mr. Earl Wilson.
Well, thank you.
Nice to have you here.
Nice to be here.
Did you hear what I said a moment ago about the fact that, I guess it doesn't happen too much anymore, but years ago, you used to be able to pick up a newspaper and read where such and such a movie star was dating another, this starlet or that starlet, and much of it that we read was not true, as Caesar pointed out.
A lot of that was really made up by press agents, and they'd say so-and-so were holding hands together at a club, and these people would call up and say, we were never in this place, and I don't know the person you're talking about. So the next day, the publicist would send out a sign that they'd broken up. They're not together anymore.
he wouldn't retract it, though. How did this whole thing happen to you? How does it feel? You know, do you like the term gossip columnist? Because I guess you're not, really, are you?
I suppose I am a gossip columnist because I print news, Mike, before it's officially released in some kind of a handout. And that's my aim, and the aim of all we columnists, I think, to try to get the stuff before somebody releases it to everyone. And I'll tell you a sample of that. Some years back, I was doing an interview with Lily Palmer, who was then married to Rex Harrison.
Yes.
And the whole world was waiting to find out whether there would be a vaccine for polio. And of all people in the world know anything about it, strangely enough, was Lily Palmer. And she said to me, you know, they found the vaccine for polio. And I said, well, where'd you find out about that? She said, Anita Luce, a playwright, told me. And I said, how'd she know? Well, she got it from somebody. And I went to work on a story, and I didn't know, this is not my field, of course. I don't know anything about medicine, but I did have some contacts with the March of Dimes through helping them with shows. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to develop the story and print it before anybody else did. And that was really gossip, because here was Lily Palmer talking in a dressing room about a major medical development, and there's nothing you could say about it except it was gossip, and yet I was able to establish it, get the doctors, and print that this was a print about the Salk polio vaccine before anybody else did.
Really scoop
due to
the
being
world.
A gossip columnist. Is that the so biggest, I don't object.
Is that the biggest scoop you've had in your 27 years?
Well, I tell you, Mike, these scoops are strange. Years later to talk about doesn't mean very much, but for example, if there's a big story developing like when everybody was all agitated about whether Elizabeth Taylor was going to divorce Eddie Fisher and marry Richard Burton, that was big stuff at that time. Now, of course, it's old, but at the moment, it was huge stuff. And I remember a scoop that I had because it so happened in that story that I couldn't print it. The lawyer, Louis Neiser, was a lawyer for Elizabeth and Eddie, and he told me one night, one afternoon, if I'd see him around dinner time at Algonquin, he might have something for me. And I went over there. Now, as I say, the whole glamour world's on edge. What's going to happen? Is Liz going to get rid of Eddie and marry Burton or what? While I was there having dinner, Louis Neiser, the lawyer, went to the telephone. And he came back after finishing the call, and he took a piece of paper out of his pocket, and it had a couple sentences on it, typed. He'd already done this in the afternoon. It said that Elizabeth Taylor announced in Rome that she's going to divorce Eddie Fisher and marry Richard Burton, or words to that effect. Now, here I had this piece of information that everybody in our business wanted, and it was about 6:45 p.m., much too late for my paper, which had gone to bed, as we call it, about 2 hours before. Mm-hmm. What was I going to do with this great story?
Well, that's a feature release, though. That isn't a column release, is it?
No, that was a huge front-page story all over the world. So what could I do with it? Well, I called some of my papers that were still, say, like Los Angeles, was still, I still make that because of the time difference.
Yes.
Phoned some of the others, and then, like all newspaper men, when you got a story, say, I got a great story. What can I do with it? So I called the Associated Press and tipped them off about it because Neiser was going to give a press conference in a couple hours and release it. And I said, you can have this right now because I don't know what else I can do with it. And they were a little hesitant. They thought, well, maybe Wilson doesn't know what he's talking about. This is too important a thing to take any chances on. So they waited till the press conference. And there I was with this great story, which I was only able to get published in two or three papers.
Well, how do you benefit? Do they have to give you credit for that?
Well, eventually, of course, the next day we had the story. But by this time, it was all over the world.
Yes.
So that was one time it worked out as a disappointment.
We're going to continue with Earl Wilson and everyone following this. Be right back. You're from a little town in the Midwest, in Ohio.
Rockford, Ohio. Right.
Rockford. Has that ever caused any problems in
New
York City?
My speech habits aren't understood too well in New York. Remember once I was doing an interview with the late Tallulah Bankhead, and she had this deep, down-the-basement voice, and I says, Tallulah, were you ever mistaken for a man on the telephone? And her answer was, no, were you?
She was famous for answers like that, wasn't she?
Then, my first name caused a lot of trouble, New Yorkers. Earl, they don't understand that. I have to say Oil Wilson, and especially the Brooklyn segment, and they all get that.
Oil Wilson?
Oil Wilson. Well, they don't understand Earl. Now, there's a true story. A reporter from Brooklyn called up one time to tell me about an Earl explosion. He said the blazing Earl was running the streets. I wished I could be out there to see this Earl disaster, and the loss in Earl was in hundreds of thousands of dollars. He finished his story and said, well, goodbye, Oil, and hung up.
How did Earl get, where did that's Earl, brother, at the end of the column? Who
sent it? Some press agent sent it in, and Mike, I don't remember who it was. They made up a lot of puns in those days. Midnight Earl, and that's Oil, brother, that's Earl, brother, and so on. And the old Oil, that was one of the nicknames for me.
Well, that's Earl, brother, for us, because we're out of time. I want to thank Earl Wilson, Cesar Romero, Lucille Armstrong, and my friend Louis Armstrong, who will be back tomorrow and the rest of the week, and we sure hope you are, too. Bye-bye.
Automobiles and other considerations provided by Chevrolet, featuring the Monte Carlo. Totally new sporty luxury car. Get on the move with a new one of the Chevrolet 70s, Monte Carlo. Guests of the Mike Douglas Show stay at Philadelphia's Warwick Hotel.
Cesar, I know you and Louis and Lucille, everyone knows about this man's reputation. I mean, I don't ever remember you writing anything negative, really negative about anyone, Earl.
Well, try not to. The BW and I worked that out years ago. BW is a beautiful wife.
She's a beautiful wife.
A barefoot wife or something.
She always is. She's a lovely person.
Thank you, Cesar.
How do you feel about columnists, Cesar?
Well, I've always gotten along very well with columnists. And so most of them have been friends of mine. Like, I've known Earl for many years. I knew Luella Parsons very well. I know Dorothy Manners very well. I knew Edith Gwynne, remember, when Edie had her column in the Reporter? All those. I never had any trouble with columnists. They never picked on me.
How about you, Louie? How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I like them all.
Can I tell you a story about Louis?
And they're all regular fellas.
Like Louis always says, he doesn't care what they say about him as long as they spell his name right.
You know. They're pretty nice.
You go ahead, Earl. Tell that story about Sam.
The other night, Ella Fitzgerald opened at Waldorf, and Satch here was right on the ringside, and this was dinner, and my wife and I noticed that Satch was sleepy. Well, this happened to all of us, of course, sometime. We can hardly stay awake.
Oh.
And Ella hadn't gone on yet, and here was Satch leaning over, and I said, I'm afraid he's going to fall. He's going to sleep. And well, he's right on his, not on his feet exactly, but...
Two martinis while we're in there.
So Ella sang one song, and then she decided to introduce people, and she introduced Satch, and he gets right up like he just suddenly gotten awake, you know. Yes. Gets right up on stage, and he told a story. Well, he took over, and I won't tell the story. I don't think it's quite the place to do
that
it.
That was nice.
Well, that was great, wasn't it, Satch? He stole
we
the whole
a
thing.
Ball, yeah.
I read about it. You wrote about,
I did
that.
Write about
he,
it.
You performed with her, too, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Sure did.
Oh, we had a
you
ball,
know, the big nightclubs, though, they seem to be disappearing, Earl. I mean, not in New York and Los Angeles and the big cities, but many parts of the country, they're
well, I'm telling you, they're disappearing in New York City, too,
I
Mike.
Think in
really?
New York, too.
Sure,
yeah,
Latin Quarter's gone.
Happening in New York.
Yes.
The Copa is about the only place, really.
Why do you suppose this is happening?
Well, I suppose, Mike, you're probably responsible for some of it. It's a television.
I'm on in the date.
But that's part of it.
That's right. Television's got a lot to do with
it. Yeah.
Remember years ago, the great clubs in New York, the supper clubs. I mean, like the Club Lido, the Club MoMA, the Club Richmond, the Helen Morgan Club, the old patio. You could go on and on. There were a million and one of them, and great clubs.
Remember the Star Club?
Well, the Star Club, and, well, of course, Morocco's still there. But they've all disappeared. They don't have that in New York
anymore.
For the
average American today, average New Yorker, economically, they can't afford it. The prices are high.
Yes, they
are.
And
they've got families, and they can do much better at home with one bottle.
That's too rough.
That's
too
rough.
And the cover charge
is not
enough.
That's what I'm talking about, yes.
I hate to see it happen. For the sake of the young performers who want to get in this business,
definitely.
There really is no proving ground anymore. There used to be places for us to play in every city across the country.
Vaudeville.
That's right. In Lauderdale Houses, the old Earl Theater here was a great place for acts and what have you. Nightclubs were also a pretty good source of material
for
you, weren't they, Earl?
Certainly were. And speaking of money, the cost of clubs, I remember the clubs were really for rich people. I remember Dick Reynolds, who was a tobacco. Went into the Copacabana or Store Club, I don't forget which place it actually was, one night, and he said to the head waiter, a Pennsylvanian named Joe Lopez, says, as he's leaving, he says, Joe, what is the biggest tip that you ever got? And Joe said, $100, sir. And so Dick Reynolds said, the next time anybody asks you that question, you can tell them $150. And he gave him $150. So then Dick Reynolds started to leave, and he turned around and he says, Joe, who was it gave you that $100 tip? Joe says, you did, sir.
Oh, that's marvelous. You know, excuse me, Louie, you were going to say something.
No.
Oh, I was going to say, in the number of years that you've been, 27 years, you've covered some unusual stories in that time. What would you say is the most unusual story that you've
ever covered? I guess the most unusual story was getting ready to cover this nudity wave we got around Broadway. I covered or uncovered a nudist convention one time, Atlantic City. And before I went over there, I called up to see whether I could attend, and they said I could go over if I'd take my clothes off like everybody else.
How did they recognize you? Did you wear a flower or something?
Well, first thing...
you got to set up a carnation in my lapel, you know?
I had to go naked, so I spoke to the BW about it, figuring she'd not welcome me going over traipsing around like that, be a little jealous. And she said, thank God, one trip you're going on, won't have to pack a bag for you.
Earl, tell me the truth now. How did you feel having to disrobe and walk out?
Mighty strange, mighty strange. I didn't know where to carry my hands.
Poor rat.
Mike.
I have a habit of putting my hands in my pockets. There'd be no pockets. You keep doing this all day long.
You know, there's one thing about nudism, a lot of things about nudism I've learned over there. One of them is they do wear something. For example, They gave me a baseball cap and tennis sneakers. Yeah, I wore those.
Are you serious?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my.
And that's a pretty good place to wear your nudist badge, you know, your convention badge, pencils, notebook, and stuff like that. It's all right for that purpose.
You know, we talked earlier about people printing things about people that they really didn't know anything about. Have you ever had to, and the fellow printing that the couple had broken up after they
had
printed that they dated, have you ever had to print a retraction?
Possibly once or twice, but generally you want to print a retraction if you make a mistake because you want to preserve your record for reputation for accuracy. One time, a long time ago, Barbara Stanwyck was in New York with Robert Taylor, who she's then married to, and he was in the service, and he was there to promote a service picture about the Coast Guard, I think it was. I wanted to interview her. I didn't care too much about him, and I went over to his hotel, and I said, "Where's Barbara?" And he says, "I think she's taking a shower." About a half hour later, she hadn't shown up on the scene, and I said, "Well, what about Barbara?" And he says, "Well, I think she's still taking a shower." Well, I went back, and I was kind of fresh and young in those days. I wrote something not very nice about her taking a shower forever. I mean, I'm implied maybe she needed a bath or something. It was not nice at all.
You were uptight when you wrote it.
No, just, uptight. So the next day, I ran into her at Stork Club, and she explained to me that she did not open herself up for any interviews on that trip because she wanted Bob to promote the picture, a service picture, exclusively, and so she stayed out of all publicity. And when I found out about it, I thought that's a wonderful thing for her to do. And so I wrote a column, a whole column, retracting my column of the day before, and it turned out to be very popular. I mean, people thought, well, that's a pretty nice thing for somebody to do, and it taught me a lesson that never make the mistake of refusing to correct an error.
Very good.
Carry that on always.
You know, there's a trend going on Broadway now where they're using older and more established stars as the stars of Broadway shows. Why is that?
Well,
is it the box office thing that they're interested
in? Of course,
in?
You take a case now like Jimmy Stewart doing Harvey there with Helen Hayes, and they can't sell it. They can't get enough seats for the people who want to see that show. And poor Jimmy Stewart then decided he had to go back to work in Hollywood, and he couldn't do any more, so they had to close the show. And it's too bad, because all the people want to see this show, and it happens with other stars, too. By the way, Broadway's going to be a great deal different one of these days, another year. All those skyscrapers going up, and the pornography dens will be will disappear. There'll be theaters in these skyscrapers. There's going to be one in Times Square. The theater will be reached by an elevator or a lift of some kind. It'll be on the second or third floor. Then there's going to be one underground theater. The theater will be actually in the basement of the new Broadway theater. This is 2 or 3 years from now.
Are these legit houses,
yes.
Earl?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does working out of New York, has that hurt you in any way as far as working on film stories?
No, because I go to the coast a lot. And
how often do you go to the coast?
Oh, I suppose about once a month, 10, 12 times a year, something like that. Of course, I go to Las Vegas, too. And incidentally, there was a story, problem of the columnist, Sammy Davis, a couple years ago on Thanksgiving, divorced, let it be known to a few friends, he and his wife are going to break up. I knew about it, and I called Sammy, and I asked him about whether he wanted to make any comment. And he said, no, and you can't print it now. That's just, because it's going to be released by an official announcement by the lawyer next Monday. I said, "Sammy, I can't hold a story like that till Monday." He said, "Well, I can't tell you any more about it, and I shouldn't have taken your phone call." Well, I printed it because I had to the next day. Next time I saw Sammy in Las Vegas, I went to see his show, went back, and he was mad at me for several months, and he wouldn't talk. He just said he didn't want to see me. Then he opened at the Copacabana in New York, and I decided, well, should I go over and review a guy that doesn't want to talk to me? I decided I should because he's that newsworthy, and I went over. And he introduced Joey Heatherton, who happened to be with my wife, myself. And then he introduced me, and he said, "Here's a guy that evidently has his own code of ethics, the same as I do." And he gave my name and everything, which I thought meant that he had made up, that he understood that I was only doing the job I had to do. So I thought that was nice, too.
That's like Sammy. He's a big person. Earl, thank you so much
thank
for being
you very
us.
Much for letting me come on
here. Best to BW. We'll see you soon. Be right back. What have you been up to since we did the Christmas special? I'll let you talk, Mary.
We've been traveling all over.
All over the place. I noticed a couple of you have picked up a pound or two.
Oh, thanks a lot.
No, really, I noticed that. And that being on the road does that, doesn't it?
Sure does. You don't have anything else to do. You get bored. The first thing you do, right to the restaurant and start eating stuff. Because that's all we ever do is eat hamburgers.
We're eating in those French restaurants in Europe.
Oh, you travel all through Europe since that I saw you, huh?
We were only in England and Scotland, and then we had to come home.
What shows did you do while you were in England?
Any? No, really good show. Yeah. It's like comparable to the Andy Williams show.
Tom Jones.
Did you do Tom Jones?
Yeah. Almost forgot Tom Jones.
Top of the Pops.
We did.
Top of the Junction.
These are shows that we would know about. The Tom Jones shows. Did you do the Engelbert Humperdinck?
We didn't do that. We were supposed to do it, but they decided they didn't want us.
You kids have been together now how long?
Almost 3 years.
To what do you attribute that longevity? Because now that, I'm not being funny, groups don't usually hang in there that long together.
The money, I think.
No, that's terrible.
Mary, that's terrible.
Yes.
What do you attribute it to, Mary?
Well, I think it's because, we were talking about this earlier, it's because that we've been able to change our direction as far as, you know, musically. We were like, our first record was like psychedelic, if you want to call it that. And then we've gone into country, and our latest one is not country at all. You know, it's more pop. I don't know. What do you think?
It's either that, I think it's a combination of that, plus truly, and this sounds corny sometimes when you say it, but it's a mutual respect and admiration for each other. Because as long as you can continue to work together as friends, money is always important. And yet, you can work through the hard times when money's not necessarily as big.
We never ever get mad because he's, you know, always the lead singer and I was always out front. And always gets all the attention. That never bothers us.
No.
Doesn't it?
They never see me.
Mickey, how can they not see you? That's impossible.
The last time I did this show, I was given a candle for a light.
But it was a Christmas show.
A lot of respect.
You know, we did a Christmas special. You never saw it.
We never did.
They got to about four different cities and missed it by an hour or two hours or a day.
We've decided that we don't need you, lousy $50,000 a week.
This is your brand new album, and it says nothing on the front. Does it say anything on the back?
No, it's
a stable of horses.
It was a real good album. We didn't want to be responsible.
Yeah. Nothing on the record either.
Hey, that's interesting.
No, it's when albums come out, they have a plastic, what they call shrink wrap over it, and that's what all the writing is on.
Very nice. You're going to do a tune from this album?
No.
I'll say this. Why did you give me the album?
Yes.
Huh? Just a little. Anything else you want to plug? Here once again are Kenny Rogers and the First Edition. Thank you.
Somebody better pay. Oh.
after this. We'll be right back.
This is the moment that we've all been waiting for.
Getting a woman behind the stove,
that's
huh?
That's right. Ham hocks and red beans.
Yes, that's Louis' favorite dish, you know.
I know.
It's my birthmark.
Oh, he's...
That's your birthmark?
So is chicken and food.
How much does it cost to prepare a meal like this?
Well, Louis, as I say, it's his favorite dish, and he grew up with it as a child in New Orleans, and in those days it was a very inexpensive. You can get a pound of beans for 3 cents or 5 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And
he said yesterday that his mother, instead of ham hocks, used to put fish heads.
No, not in this.
When the fish
heads? That was Coubillon.
Oh, Coubillon.
But the red beans, you have to put the salt pork or the slab bacon.
Okay.
And the ham hocks. I mean, all of these pot meals will fill up a family for you. You know, it'll feed a family.
That's right. What besides this and the red beans and the chicken are some of Louis' favorites?
Louis told me when he married me that I could feed him anything but bananas and cucumbers. I've never had trouble with Louis with food.
Bananas and cucumbers.
He won't eat those.
Both of which repeat a lot.
Yeah. Anything else, Louis? He's a very good eater. And he likes simple foods, though.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't like the fancy
he's French
cuisine.
He's not a gourmet.
No.
I see.
No.
I'm kind of that way, too.
No.
Do you like the fancy stuff?
I'll eat anything. I'm very easy to feed.
Does he eat a lot when he's home, Lucille? Or just
Louis eats three squares
a day, or what?
Well, he has to eat three meals a day, but they're not squares. They're a little here, a little, but he has a big... His main meal is a large meal. And he's not a second helper. Whatever I put on his plate, he eats
that.
That's
it. Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't leave manners, as his mother tells him, you know, leave a little for manners. He doesn't leave manners. He cleans his plate.
Now, how do you prepare it? These are the ham hocks, huh?
Well, to begin with, if you want me to, this red beans and rice dish is Louis' favorite. And you start out with your red kidney bean, and you soak them overnight.
In what?
In plain water, cold water. Louis says you have to take the whistle out of them.
Yeah.
And so I do.
Okay.
So we'll start with the beans. We'll put the beans in. These beans have been soaked.
Yeah, okay.
All right. So we'll start with the beans.
Whistler's mother soaked them.
Yeah. Now, after that...
How much beans do you put in there?
Well, actually, I put all they had here, but actually, I only cook a pound. 1 pound of beans.
And that's...
That'll feed you for a couple of days.
Oh, really?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
You know. And after that, you put your water...
Can you lift that all right?
I'm a little weak.
Let me think. Okay, sees. I got it.
You got it?
Yeah,
right,
how much of that?
Well, are you pulled water to cover?
Oh, to cover? Oh,
yeah.
You got
cover
long,
the beans.
You got a long way to go to cover those kids.
You got a long way to go after you eat them.
Whole drop of water.
That enough?
All right, that's enough. Yeah, uh-huh. And after that, after you wash the beans and drain and put water to cover,
okay.
Then you add your
bacon or the salt pork. This is bacon, isn't it?
Well, this is bacon. I prefer bacon. It has a lot more seasoning
than
salt pork. All you get is salt fat, really. And who needs all of that? So you just
Can I help you?
Well, I might have
got an axe, right?
This is not a bad knife.
No.
Mm-mm.
You catch any bad time with it, let me cut it for you.
No, you haven't been cooking. You
been
eat it.
Cooking. He's been cooking for a lot of years out in front of that band.
So I dice this, and you know, I dice the...
I'll do that for you. You can move on to the next step, okay?
You want to get your hands all greasy?
That's all right. I'm already halfway there.
So you dice it, and it's been diced.
Okay.
And you put it in the beans.
Okay, we'll pretend that's
all right. Then you put your onion. One small onion.
Here's a knife. Peel your onion. Of course, these beans are on the fire, you know.
Oh, yeah. Cook, baby.
Who's going to eat this?
Well, anybody that's got a seatbelt can go faster. Anybody that's tied down.
Honestly, goodness.
So you dice
your onions and you cut them up into the beans. I don't want to put the skin in.
Okay.
That's all right.
Then you just cut them up in here.
Okay. Boom. Now, Lucille,
Lucille
has prepared this earlier because it takes time to prepare this. And this is the finished product.
This I bought from New York with me.
Did you? Let's taste it. Now, what do you do? Put rice on the plate first?
You put rice on the plate first. Let Louis show you how to do that.
No, you go ahead. I'm watching.
Is that right?
Yeah.
A little more?
So I'm watching. Put enough. That's enough?
That enough?
And
you put a piece of garlic.
Right now.
Do I still talk about
garlic? Sure, please.
You put some garlic in. I don't like the taste of garlic, so I usually put a toothpick. Or tie a string around the garlic, and after it's all cooked, I just draw it out of the pot. You know, there's your garlic. And you drop a red pepper pod. This is a very, 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 very strong one, so it depends on how strong, how peppery you like your food. Cut that up in there.
How long do you cook all of this in the pot?
It cooks I cook mine about 4 to 5 hours. Now, after this is cooked for about an hour,
take a shot at this season.
Then, after it's cooked about an hour, then you put your ham hocks in.
Yeah, Louis.
Ham hocks. And you just let it simmer until it's almost done. Then you salt to taste. Then after that, after it's completely done, you add 1 8-ounce can of tomato sauce in I'd like to give the color of the beans back. Once you soak them, you get all the red out, so make them red again. As these
And Caesar, somebody else wants to taste some of this. I know he's a good friend of yours, Louis. Here is the most fabulous singer of all time, Mr. Joe Williams.
Hey!
Joe! I know that you want this recipe at home because this is really something special. So send us, if you will, please, a self-addressed stamped envelope, and we will send you back this recipe. Just send your self-addressed stamped envelope to the Mike Douglas Show. Ask for Louis' favorite, the Mike Douglas Show, 1619 Walnut, Philadelphia, 19103. Joe?
Graham Kerr, eat your heart out.
We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, Lucille and Louis Armstrong. And by the way, this is Lucille's. This is her request. This is what she wanted Louis to sing to her. Louis?
I'm confessing that I love you. Tell me, do you love me too? I'm confessing that I need you. Honest, I do. Oh, baby, need you every moment. Your eyes are reading some strange things, baby. But your lips deny they're true. Will your answer really change things? Making them blue. Making them blue. I'm afraid someday you leave me. Saying, can we still be friends? Bye. If you go, you know you grieve me. All my life on you depends, yeah. Am I guessing that you love me, baby? Dreaming dreams of you in vain, bands. I'm confessing that I love you. Chops. Over again.
Automobiles and other considerations provided by Chevrolet, featuring the Monte Carlo, the totally new sporty luxury car. Get on the move with the new one of the Chevrolet 70s, Monte Carlo. Guests of the Mike Douglas Show stay at Philadelphia's Warwick Hotel.